Right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to really try to break down this whole idea of casualty insurance.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to be mainly using chapter 5 from a source we have. It's called P&C Chapter 5 Basics of Casualty.
Okay.
So it should be a good deep dive.
Sounds good.
So casualty insurance, it's one of those things. It's not like your typical, you know, homeowner's insurance or renter's insurance.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's not protecting, you know, your stuff. Mm-hmm. It's more about, you know, covering the cost of damage or injury you might cause to someone else.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's really about protecting, you know, others from you. You know, like the source uses a great example of, you know, imagine you're driving down the road.
Okay.
And you hit a patch of ice.
Oh, yeah.
And you slide into someone else's car. That's where casualty insurance would come into play. You've accidentally caused damage to someone else's property, and now there's a possibility you'll be held financially responsible for those damages.
Yeah, right. So in that situation, how do we determine who's at fault? Is it always like a black and white, this person did this, or is there like a gray area?
Yeah, there's definitely a gray area. Accidents can be very complicated, and often there's shared responsibility.
Okay.
But the foundation of most casualty insurance claims rests on this concept of negligence.
Negligence. Okay, so we hear that word a lot, right? But what does that actually mean, like legally speaking?
So it's basically the idea that you didn't act with a reasonable level of care, and that failure to be careful led to someone else getting hurt or their property being damaged. It's sort of like the legal version of, oops, my bad.
Okay.
But with potentially serious financial consequences.
Got it. So it's not about like the intention to harm, but it's more about the carelessness that results in that unintended damage.
You got it. Yeah. And it's different from, say, a bank robbery, which is a crime. You know, negligence falls under what are called torts.
Torts. Okay. So instead of going to jail, you end up, you know, paying for the damages.
Precisely. Yeah. It's about making things right financially with the person you've harmed. And that's where casualty insurance steps in to protect you from potentially devastating costs.
Okay. That makes sense. But how do we actually prove that someone has been negligent? Like, what are the actual pieces of the puzzle we need to put together?
Right. So the source lays out four key elements that must be present to establish negligence. And I think it's easiest to understand if we stick with that car accident scenario we've been talking about.
Okay. So we have our icy road, two cars collide. What's the first element we need to look at?
The first is legal duty. So in that car accident, you as a driver have a legal duty to operate your vehicle safely and follow the rules of the road. It's about recognizing that your actions, you know, could impact others.
Okay, so it's not just following the law for your own sake, it's also to protect others on the road as well.
Exactly.
Okay.
And now the second element is breach of duty. This means you did something or failed to do something that violated that legal duty of care. So in our example, maybe you were distracted by your phone.
Oh, okay.
And you didn't see the ice in time, causing you to lose control of your car.
Okay.
That distraction could be considered a breach of your duty to drive attentively.
All right. So we've established a duty and a breach of duty.
Right.
What's the next piece of the puzzle?
So it's called proximate cause. And this one gets a little tricky.
Oh.
It's about directly connecting your breach of duty to the harm that occurred. So, you know, did your act of swerving because you were on your phone directly cause the accident? Or was there something else that broke the chain of events?
Okay.
It's all about establishing a clear cause and effect relationship.
Okay, so it's not enough to just be careless. You have to be careless. And that carelessness needs to be the direct reason that the person was harmed or their property was damaged.
Precisely.
Right.
And finally, the fourth element is damages. So there has to be actual harm or loss as a result of your actions. So in our car crash scenario, it's pretty clear. The other car was damaged. And that damage represents the tangible consequence of your negligence.
Okay, so to recap, we have the four elements.
Yeah.
Duty, breach, cause, and damages.
Right.
All have to be present to prove negligence in a casualty claim.
Exactly.
But what happens if, you know, someone says, well, wait a minute, I wasn't completely at fault. You know, are there ways to defend yourself against a negligence claim?
There are, yeah.
Okay.
There are a few common defenses that people might use. One of the most interesting is the distinction between contributory negligence and comparative negligence.
Okay, those sound like very legal terms. Can we break those down into like plain English?
Sure. So let's tweak our car accident example just a little bit. So let's say you're driving down the road and someone pulls out in front of you, forcing you to slam on your brakes. And you manage to avoid hitting them, but you skid into a parked car. Now, imagine this happened in a state with contributory negligence laws. Even though the other driver's actions played a role, you wouldn't be able to recover any money from them to help pay for the damage you caused simply because you were also negligent. So it's a pretty strict system.
Got it. Okay, so what about comparative negligence?
So that's where things get a little more balanced, you know. In a comparative negligence state, the court would look at the actions of both drivers and try to assign a percentage of fault to each person. So they might say, you know, the other driver was 60% responsible for the situation, and you were 40% responsible for hitting the parked car.
So in that case, I could potentially recover some money from the other driver to help cover the costs that I caused.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a more nuanced approach that acknowledges that accidents often involve shared responsibility.
That definitely seems fairer. Now, besides trying to shift the blame, to the other person, are there any other ways someone could argue that they're not responsible for damages?
There are, yeah. One common defense is called assumption of risk. So think about a football player who gets injured during a game. You know, they can't sue the other team for causing their injuries because they knowingly entered a situation with inherent risks.
So it's like saying if you choose to play a dangerous sport, you're accepting the fact that you might get hurt.
That's the general idea, yeah. Another interesting defense is what's called intervening cause. So this is where something completely unexpected happens that breaks that chain of events, and that unexpected event becomes the real cause of the harm.
So like I'm driving down the road and, a meteor suddenly crashes in front of me, causing me to swerve and hit a tree.
Right,
It's
exactly.
the meteor's fault,
Right,
I mean.
exactly. You know, it's a dramatic example, but you know, it illustrates the point. It's about something unforeseen and completely outside of your control becoming the primary cause of the damage.
I'm starting to understand like all the nuances of this negligence and how liability is determined. But I have a question. Do you always have to prove negligence to hold someone financially responsible for causing harm? Or are there any like exceptions to that rule?
There are some exceptions, yeah. And this is where things get particularly interesting, especially when it comes to certain types of activities that are considered inherently dangerous. And that's where the concept of absolute liability comes in.
Okay, here's where it gets interesting. Tell me more.
All right. So imagine a person decides to, you know, keep a pet tiger in their backyard. A pet tiger. Now, even if they build a super secure enclosure and they take every precaution to prevent that tiger from escaping, if that tiger does manage to get out and injure someone, the owner could still be held liable under this principle of absolute liability.
Okay, so it's like saying if you choose to have a dangerous animal, you are absolutely responsible for any harm that it causes, no matter how careful you are.
Yeah, you got it. It's based on the idea that the risk associated with certain activities is just so high that, you know, even extreme caution might not be enough to prevent harm. It's like saying, you know, if you're going to play with fire, you better be prepared to get burned, even if you're wearing, you know, fireproof gloves.
Wow, that's a powerful concept.
Yeah.
So it's not about fault or negligence, it's just about, whoever is taking on that inherent risk.
Exactly, yeah. And strict liability is a similar concept. It's often applied to product liability cases. So imagine, you know, a company designs a new type of baby crib, but there's a flaw in the design that makes it easy for babies to get trapped and, you know, suffocate. Now, even if the company didn't intend to create a dangerous product, they could still be held strictly liable for any harm caused by that design flaw.
So even if they didn't intend to do that, they can still be held liable.
Exactly. Yeah. The focus is on the product itself and whether it's defective, not on the intentions or actions of the, you know, manufacturer.
Those exceptions to the negligence rule definitely add another layer of complexity to this whole thing. But here's another curveball. What if I'm doing something careless, but someone else ends up being held responsible for the damage that I cause? Is that even possible?
It is, yeah. It's more common than you might think.
Okay.
That's where the concept of vicarious liability comes into play.
Okay.
It's the idea that someone can be held responsible for the actions of another person, even if they didn't directly cause the harm.
Okay, help me wrap my head around this. Give me like a real world example.
Yep.
All right. So think about a pizza delivery driver who's rushing to make a delivery
Yeah.
and ends up running a red light, causing an accident. So the driver is obviously at fault for the accident, but their employer could also be held vicariously liable because the accident occurred while the driver was acting on behalf of the company.
Oh, okay. So it's like saying the pizza place is sharing the responsibility for their employees' actions while they're on the clock.
Precisely, yeah. And vicarious liability can apply in other situations too. You know, think about a parent being held responsible for their child's actions,
Okay.
or a homeowner being held liable for the actions of, you know, a contractor they hired.
Okay, wow, that definitely adds a whole new dimension to this whole idea of responsibility.
Okay.
But let's shift gears a bit and talk about what happens when someone is found liable for causing harm. What are the consequences of that?
So the consequences are usually financial. When someone is found liable, a court might order them to pay what are called damages to the person they harmed.
Okay.
And the idea is to compensate the victim for their losses.
So we're talking about things like medical bills, car repairs, maybe lost wages if they weren't able to work because of their injuries.
Yeah, that's right. Those are all examples of what are called compensatory damages, and those are meant to cover the actual costs associated with the harm that was caused. They're intended to, you know, make the injured party whole again, as much as money can do that.
But I'm guessing money can't always fully compensate for things like pain and suffering or emotional distress. Are those considered damages too?
They are, yeah. That's where general damages come in, and these are a little bit trickier to put a precise dollar amount on because they deal with the less tangible effects of the harm, like pain, suffering, emotional distress, maybe even the loss of enjoyment of life.
Okay, so special damages cover the concrete costs. And then general damages are attempting to compensate for the more subjective and emotional impact of the harm.
You got it.
Okay.
But there's another category of damages that's even more interesting. Punitive damages.
Punitive damages. Ooh, those sound serious. What are those all about?
So punitive damages aren't about making the victim whole. They're about punishing the wrongdoer and deterring them and others from engaging in similar behavior in the future.
Oh, okay.
They're typically awarded in cases where the person who caused the harm acted recklessly, maliciously, or showed just a blatant disregard for the safety of others.
So the source had a pretty chilling example about a car manufacturer who knew about a potentially deadly defect in their cars,
Right.
but they chose not to fix it because they wanted to save money.
Right.
And if someone gets seriously hurt or killed because of that defect, could that company be hit with punitive damages?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a way for the courts to send a message that, you know, putting profits before safety is unacceptable and will have serious consequences.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've got a pretty good understanding of how liability is determined, the different types of damages that can be awarded, even some strategies for defending yourself against a negligence claim. But how does all of this connect back to the whole point of our deep dive? Casualty insurance.
Right.
What role does it play in this whole legal and financial maze?
That's the key question.
Yeah.
And the answer is simple, yet incredibly powerful. The purpose of liability insurance, which is a major part of casualty insurance, is to protect you from financial ruin if you are found liable for causing harm to someone else.
Oh, okay. So instead of having to drain my savings account or sell my house to pay off a huge judgment, my insurance company steps in and covers those costs.
Precisely. Yeah. It's a safety net designed to prevent financial devastation in the face of a liability claim. It transfers the burden of that financial responsibility from your shoulders to the shoulders of the insurance company.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. It's like a financial shield against the unexpected. But what exactly does that shield cover? What types of harm are we talking about?
So you'll typically see three main categories of harm covered under liability insurance. You'll have bodily injury, property damage, and personal injury.
Okay, those sound pretty straightforward. So bodily injury, That's any physical harm to a person, right?
Exactly. It includes everything from, you know, minor cuts and bruises to broken bones, serious illnesses, even death resulting from an injury you caused.
Okay. And property damage, that's pretty self-explanatory, right? It's damage to someone's stuff, like their car, their house, their belongings.
You got it.
Okay.
But personal injury, that's where things get a little more nuanced.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that. I thought personal injury was the same as bodily injury, but what's the difference?
Yeah, so in the legal world, personal injury often covers things like slander, libel, defamation of character, invasion of privacy. The situations where someone's reputation or emotional well-being is harmed rather than their physical body.
Oh, okay.
But importantly, when it comes to insurance, the term personal injury can have a different meaning.
Oh, okay.
It's not always automatically covered under a standard liability policy.
Okay. So if I, you know, write a nasty blog post about my neighbor and get sued for defamation,
right,
my liability insurance might not cover the legal costs.
It's a possibility. It really depends on the specific wording of your policy.
Okay.
Some policies might offer limited coverage for certain types of, you know, personal injury as defined by the insurance world.
Okay.
But you always want to check the fine print and make sure you understand what's covered and what's not.
Okay, that's good advice. Always read the fine print and don't just assume you're covered. So we've got a good grasp on the types of harm that liability insurance typically covers. But how do these policies actually work? We hear a lot about limits of liability. What does that even mean?
Right. So those limits are a crucial part of understanding how much protection you actually have. They refer to the maximum amount of money the insurance company will pay out for a covered claim. And there are a few different ways those limits can be expressed.
Okay, I'm ready for my crash course in insurance limits. Give me the breakdown.
Okay, so let's start with split limits, which are commonly used in car insurance policies. You might see something like 100-300-0-50, and these numbers represent thousands of dollars.
Wait, so a policy with limits of 100-300-50 actually means what?
It means the insurer will pay up to $100,000 per person for bodily injury claims from a single accident. The $300,000 is the maximum payout for all bodily injury claims combined in that same accident. And the $50,000 is the maximum for property damage in that accident.
Okay.
So it's like splitting the coverage into three separate buckets.
Got it. So there are limits on how much they'll pay per person, total per accident for injuries, total for property damage.
Exactly. But another way to express those limits is with a single limit, also known as a combined single limit. So let's say your policy has a single limit of $500,000. That means the insurer will pay up to $500,000 for all claims combined, both bodily injury and property damage that arise from a single accident.
Okay, so instead of three separate buckets, it's just one big pool of money that covers everything.
Precisely.
Okay.
And it's important to understand that once that limit is reached, the insurance company is off the hook for any further costs related to that accident.
Yeah, that makes sense. So those limits, whether they're split or single, are basically setting the ceiling on how much the insurance company will pay out for a covered claim. But are there any limits on, like, how many claims I can make during the policy period?
That's a great question. It brings us to two other important limit concepts: the per person limit and the distinction between occurrence and aggregate limits.
Okay, my brain is ready. Hit me with those definitions.
All right, so a per person limit is the maximum amount the insurer will pay for injuries to a single person involved in an accident or what's called an occurrence. It's like a sub-limit within the overall policy limit.
Okay, so let's say my policy has a per person limit of $50,000.
Right.
And an overall bodily injury limit of $300,000.
Right.
And I cause an accident that injures three people.
Right.
So the insurance company will pay for any one person's injuries is $50,000.
Right.
But the total payout for all three people combined can't exceed that $300,000 limit.
You got it.
Okay.
Now, the difference between an occurrence and an aggregate limit can be a little confusing.
Okay.
So think of an occurrence as a single event that triggers coverage. So, you know, a car accident, a slip and fall at your business, a dog bite. It's a distinct incident that leads to a claim.
So an occurrence limit is the maximum payout for that single event, like that car accident we keep talking about.
Exactly. An aggregate limit, on the other hand, is the total amount the insurer will pay out for all covered claims combined during the entire policy period, which is which is typically a year.
Okay, so if I have a business liability policy with $100,000 per occurrence limit and a $1 million aggregate limit,
right,
I could have multiple $100,000 claims throughout the year.
Right.
But the total payout from the insurance company could never exceed $1 million.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Once that aggregate limit is reached, you know, the well runs dry, even if there's, you know, time left on the policy.
Okay. That makes these limits really, really important to understand.
Right.
So the occurrence limit resets with each new claim.
Right.
But that aggregate limit is a running total for the entire policy period. But what happens when the policy renews? Does that aggregate limit reset too?
Yes, it does. When you renew your policy, the aggregate limit is restored to its full amount. It's like hitting the reset button on your coverage.
Oh, okay. So even if my business used up its entire aggregate limit in 1 year,
right,
I start fresh with a brand new limit when I renew the policy.
You got it. That's the beauty of renewing your coverage. You're replenishing your protection for the year ahead.
Got it. All this talk about limits is making me realize how important it is to choose the right amount of coverage.
Yeah.
But I have a question that might sound a little naive. Are there ever times when an insurance company will pay out more than the policy limits?
Right.
It seems like those limits are pretty ironclad.
So those limits are usually the absolute maximum the insurer will pay for a covered claim.
Yeah.
But there is one interesting exception to that rule. Supplementary payments.
Ooh, supplementary payments. That sounds intriguing. What are those all about?
So they're like bonus coverage perks that are provided on top of your policy's limit of liability. They don't actually increase that limit,
okay,
but they cover certain costs that might arise during a claim. The source uses a handy acronym to remember these. It's BAILED D.
Okay, I'm all about a good acronym. So let's break down this BAILED.
Okay.
What does each letter stand for?
So B is for bonds. Liability policies often cover certain types of bonds that might be required during a claim.
Okay.
Think bail bonds, appeal bonds, or release of attachment bonds.
Hold on. So even though there's a limit on how much they'll pay for the judgment against me.
Right.
They might cover the cost of getting me out of jail while the case is ongoing.
Exactly.
Okay, that's wild. What about the A?
So A stands for aid, specifically first aid. So your policy might cover the cost of providing first aid to someone at the scene of an accident, even if you're later found not to be at fault.
Yeah.
It encourages people to help others in need without, you know, worrying about the financial burden.
So if I witness a car accident,
right,
and I rush to help someone who's injured, my liability insurance might cover the cost of any immediate medical attention I provide.
That's right. Now, I stands for interest.
Okay.
And this can be a little confusing.
Wait, how does interest come to play in an insurance claim?
So there are two types of interest that might be covered, pre-judgment interest and post-judgment interest.
Okay.
So pre-judgment interest is the interest that can accrue on a court-ordered payment before the insurance company actually makes the payment.
Okay.
And post-judgment interest is the interest that accumulates after a judgment is awarded, but before the insurance company pays it.
Okay. So if a court orders me to pay like $100,000 to someone that I harmed,
mm-hmm,
and there's a delay before the insurance company, you know, cuts the check, they might also cover the interest that built up during that time.
Precisely. Yeah. They're helping to protect you from those extra interest charges that could, you know, pile up through no fault of your own.
Okay. That makes sense. What about the L in bailed?
So L stands for loss of earnings.
Okay.
This refers to, you know, income you might lose if you have to miss work to deal with the legal process. So, you know, like attending hearings, depositions, or meetings with lawyers.
Okay. So on top of covering the damages,
right,
they might also reimburse me for lost wages while I'm, you know, fighting the case.
You got it. Now we're getting close to the end.
Yeah.
E stands for expenses.
Okay.
And these are the, you know, the reasonable expenses you might incur at the insurance company's request during the investigation or defense of the claim.
So if the insurance company needs me to like fly across the country to meet with an expert witness,
right,
they'll cover my travel costs.
Yeah, that's the general idea. They want to make sure you have the resources you need to, you know, build a strong defense without, you know, emptying your pockets.
Okay.
And finally, D stands for defense costs.
Okay.
These are the, you know, the legal fees you rack up while defending yourself against a claim.
Okay, so even if I lose the case and the insurance company have to pay out the policy limit,
right,
they'll also cover my lawyer's fees.
Precisely, yeah. It's a huge relief to know that even in a worst case scenario, you won't be left with a, you know, mountain of legal bills on top of the judgment itself.
Okay, those supplementary payments are definitely a valuable perk. But to really understand the whole picture, we need to talk about what happens after a loss occurs. You know, what are my responsibilities as the insured person in that situation?
That's an important point. So after a loss happens, you have certain duties and obligations to make sure the claim is handled properly. And these are often spelled out in the duties after loss section of your policy.
Okay, so what are my top priorities if I'm ever in that unfortunate situation?
So the most important thing is to promptly notify the insurance company in writing about any potential losses. This allows them to start investigating the claim right away and prevents any unnecessary delays.
Okay, so no trying to sweep things under the rug or hoping that the problem will just, you know, magically disappear.
Definitely not. Yeah, transparency and quick communication with the insurer are key.
Okay.
And speaking of communication, it's also crucial to forward any relevant documents you receive.
Yeah, what kind of documents are we talking about?
Think demand letters from lawyers, court filings, official notices, basically anything related to the claim. It's about keeping the insurer in the loop and providing them with all the information they need to effectively, you know, evaluate and defend the claim.
Okay, got it.
Right.
So if someone serves me with
a lawsuit, I shouldn't panic and try to hide it. I should just make a copy and send it straight to my insurance company.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't try to handle things on your own or play lawyer. You know, your insurance company is your partner in this process.
Right.
And that partnership extends to actively assisting with the case as needed.
Right.
What does that kind of assistance look like?
It might involve, you know, giving information to the insurer's investigators, cooperating with their lawyers, or even testifying in court if necessary. The important thing is to be honest, responsive, and helpful throughout the process. Remember, you're both on the same team,
yeah,
in working towards the best possible outcome.
So it's a collaborative effort where I need to play my part to make sure things run smoothly.
Right.
Are there any, like, big don'ts I should be aware of when it comes to handling a claim?
Yeah, one of the biggest don'ts is admitting fault or making any payments to the other party without first getting the green light from your insurance company. They need to be involved in every step of the process.
Okay, so no trying to settle things on my own or accepting blame before the insurance company has a chance to investigate.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to jeopardize your coverage or make things more complicated than they need to be. You know, leave the negotiating and legal wrangling to the professionals.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Now that we've covered the duties of the insured after a loss, let's wrap up our deep dive into casualty insurance, mm-hmm, by talking about what it doesn't cover.
Right.
What are some common exclusions found in these policies?
Yeah, that's a great question. So while liability insurance provides, you know, broad protection, it's not a free for all. There are certain situations and types of losses that are typically excluded.
Okay, so give us the rundown of what's typically not covered. I'm all ears.
Okay, so one of the most common exclusions is damage to property that you own.
Okay.
Remember, liability insurance is all about covering damage to other people's property, not your own stuff.
So if I back my car into my own garage door,
right,
I can't file a liability claim to cover the repairs.
No, you'd need to rely on your property insurance for that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What else is typically off limits when it comes to liability coverage?
Another common exclusion is damage to property that's in your care, custody, or control. So if you borrow your neighbor's lawnmower and accidentally run it over a rock, damaging the blades, your liability insurance likely won't cover the repair costs.
Okay, so it's about being clear that liability insurance is for things that don't belong to you and aren't under your direct control.
Exactly. Yeah, it's about drawing those boundaries of responsibility. And while we're on the topic of boundaries, bodily injury to yourself is another major exclusion.
Okay, so if I trip over my own 2 feet and break my arm, I can't sue myself and file a liability claim.
That's right. Liability insurance is about protecting you from from financial responsibility for harm you caused others, not for your own, you know, mishaps.
Okay, those exclusions make sense. Are there any other big categories of losses that are typically excluded?
Yeah, losses that are covered under workers' compensation laws are typically excluded from liability policies. Mm. And the idea there is to prevent duplication of coverage.
So if an employee is injured on the job, their employer's liability insurance wouldn't come into play.
Right.
Because workers' compensation would handle those costs.
Exactly. Yeah, it's about streamlining the process and having a dedicated system for workplace injuries. Similarly, losses covered by nuclear energy liability policies are typically carved out of standard liability policies.
Okay, those specialized risks definitely need their own unique coverage.
Right.
Any other major exclusions I should be aware of?
Yeah, the final big one is intentional acts that cause injury or damage. So liability insurance is designed to cover accidents, not deliberate wrongdoing.
Okay, so if I punch someone in the face,
right,
my liability insurance isn't going to cover their medical bills or any legal trouble I get into.
No, intentional acts are generally excluded because, you know, you're considered responsible for the foreseeable consequences of your deliberate actions.
Well, like that makes sense both legally and ethically, right? Mm. It's about drawing a line between accidental harm and intentional wrongdoing.
Exactly. It's about understanding that insurance is designed to protect against the unexpected, not to provide a safety net for deliberate harmful actions.
Okay, we've covered so much ground in this deep dive into casualty insurance.
Yeah.
It's been like a whirlwind tour of liability, negligence, damages, and the safety net of insurance coverage.
Right.
But before we move on, let's take a moment to recap some of the key takeaways for our listeners, just to make sure everything is crystal clear.
Yeah, sounds like a great idea. What are some of the most important things you think people should walk away understanding?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that, you know, casualty insurance is primarily about protecting you from financial liability for harm that you might cause to others. It's not about covering your own stuff, but rather about covering the costs of damage or injury you might inflict on someone else, whether it's through an accident, negligence, or even in some cases through no fault of your own.
That's a great summary, and it's all built around this fascinating concept of negligence, the idea that you didn't act with a reasonable level of care, and that failure to be careful led to someone else getting hurt or their property being damaged.
Right. And we learned that to prove negligence, four key elements have to be in place: legal duty, breach of duty, proximate cause, and damages.
Right. And we explored some of the common defenses people might use to argue against a negligence claim, like trying to prove that the other party was also at fault or that they knowingly assumed the risk of injury.
We also uncovered some interesting exceptions to the rule of negligence, like absolute liability for inherently dangerous activities and strict liability for defective products. Mm-hmm. Where someone can be held responsible for harm even if they weren't careless or negligent.
Yeah. Right. It's like saying, you know, if you choose to play with fire, you better be prepared to get burned, even if you're being super careful. And of course, we can't forget about those supplementary payments that can be such a lifesaver. They cover those extra costs that can pop up during a claim, like legal fees, lost wages, and even cost of posting bail if you happen to get arrested.
And last but not least, we talked about some common exclusions found in liability policies. Those situations and types of losses that aren't covered, like damage to your own property or injuries you inflict on yourself. It's a good reminder that insurance is designed to protect against the unexpected, not to be a safety net for everything that could possibly go wrong.
This has been a fantastic overview of casualty insurance.
Yeah.
But before we move on, I have one final question for our listeners, something to ponder as they continue to explore this fascinating world of risk and responsibility.
Oh. I love a good brain teaser. What question do you have for audience?
So given all we've discussed about the different types of liability, the concept of negligence, and the ways people can, you know, defend themselves against claims, do you think our legal system always strikes the right balance between holding people accountable for their actions and protecting them from unfair or excessive financial burdens?
That's a great question that really gets to the heart of the purpose and function of casualty insurance. It's about finding that sweet spot between, you know, individual responsibility and collective protection.
Yeah, it's a question with no easy answers, and mm-hmm. and it's something that will continue to evolve as our society grapples with the complexities of risk, responsibility, and the role of insurance in navigating those uncertainties.
This has been an incredibly insightful exploration of casualty insurance, but don't worry, we're not done yet.
We
have much more to uncover, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after a quick break. Okay, we're back, ready to finish up our casualty insurance deep dive.
Yeah, thanks.
We covered, you know, negligence, liability, those tricky situations of premises liability, product liability, even professional liability.
Right.
A lot to think about.
Oh, yeah. A lot of different ways you can be held responsible for causing harm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we've, you know, talked about, you know, those insurance policies, how they can, you know, protect you from those, you know, those huge financial hits if you're held responsible for damaging someone or their property. We even talked about those sneaky supplementary payments.
Right. Yeah, those extras that can really come in handy.
Right. Exactly. But as we wrap up, I want to, you know, shift gears just a bit and talk about something we haven't really touched on. The human side of all of this.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's easy to get lost in the, you know, the legal terms, the dollar amounts, but we can't forget that these claims involve, you know, real people who've been hurt.
Right, exactly. You know, we throw around these words, you know, negligence, liability, damages.
Yeah.
But those are, you know, they represent real life events that can, yeah, you know, have a huge impact on people's lives.
Absolutely. You know, think about a car accident that leaves someone with, you know, serious injuries, needing extensive medical treatment, maybe even ongoing care, or a family that, you know, loses their home in a fire that was caused by a faulty appliance. These are events that can be just devastating.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder that insurance isn't just about these abstract concepts and legal jargon. It's really about, you know, providing a safety net for people when these unexpected things, you know, turn their lives upside down.
Yeah, it's about helping them, you know, pick up the pieces and rebuild their lives after experiencing a loss, whether it's, you know, physical or emotional or financial.
Right. And while, you know, the money can help with the practical stuff, you know, it can't always make up for the emotional toll, you know, the long-term consequences.
Yeah, that's very true. Sometimes the scars, they run deeper.
Yeah.
You know, and it's important to remember that, to approach these situations with, you know, with empathy and understanding.
Absolutely. You know, it's about remembering that behind every insurance claim, there's a human story, a story of loss and resilience and the often difficult process of healing and moving forward.
Right. And as we wrap up, I think it's a good time to reflect on that bigger picture, the role of insurance in our society and the balance it tries to strike between individual responsibility and collective protection.
It's a fascinating idea, isn't it? This whole idea that we kind of pool our resources and share the burden of risk so that when something bad does happen, we can, you know, support each other, help each other get through it.
Right, exactly. It's a reminder that we're all connected, and even though we can't always stop bad things from happening, you know, we can create systems of support to help each other through those challenges.
Right. It's about recognizing that, you know, life has uncertainties, but we don't have to face them alone.
Exactly.
We can create these mechanisms like insurance to provide that sense of security and stability.
It can help us become a more, you know, resilient society. People feel empowered to take risks, pursue their dreams, knowing that there's a, you know, a safety net there if things go wrong.
Absolutely. Well said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive into casualty insurance.
Yeah.
You know, we covered so much, you know, lots of complicated ideas, but I think we made them a little bit easier to understand.
I hope so.
So to our listeners, thank you for tuning in, for taking the time to learn about this important but often overlooked part of our modern lives. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay safe out there.